Welcome back to the A-List, guys, coming at you with your A-List lowdown for Friday the 13th. I don't know, that can't be good, but yeah, Friday the 13th, 2025, with Modest Recusal and Build Budget Burger.
I was going to do Build a Budget Burger?
Like Build-A-Bear?
Well, or build a burger, like, you know, you can build a burger or build a bear. And but yeah, I mean, it's crazy that they're talking about it in the Canadian part of it, like about Build-A-Burg, and they're going to Build-A-Burg.
The Build-A-Burgs?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
They're just discussing it. I mean, who's going? Well, the finance minister, supposedly.
Do you want to just
jump into that right now? Or?
Sure.
Yeah, let's just jump into that so we can make it a segment here. So, I mean, I love that this stuff's being talked about now, you know, that's kind of where I'm at. I'm just happy that these things that we've been discussing for decades is being discussed in the Canadian government.
Yeah, just remember last time this happened, we got hoodwinked.
Okay, well, let's see what this happens here. This is business of supply. Let's see here.
Is the Minister of Finance going to be using taxpayer dollars to travel out of the country this week?
So he's asking that for a reason, right?
Because he knows. Look at the little smirk on his face.
First of all, I'm asking to say hello to my colleague. He was my critic when I was a young man, Mr. Speaker, when I started in this House. And now I see that 10 years after, I still have the pleasure to have to answer his question. He comes from a great region. My dad lives next to him.
I grew west.
Is the Minister of Financing planning on traveling to the Bilderberg meetings this week?
Maybe this is a fake video. Is he even answering that question? I mean, it seems weird. Let's go on.
Taxpayer dollars?
Pause it. They never answer the question.
Well, that's true, too. That's a good point.
To answer questions from my colleague, like I said, he comes from a great region where my family is also.
Like, who gives a shit about all this about your family? Comes from a great region. Like, why is he saying all that?
So I've seen him in action, and it's great to see that they can.
For Niagara West.
I just want to ask the finance minister why he believes that he should spend time at the Bilderberg meetings rather than actually tabling a budget.
Honorable Minister.
Mr. Speaker, I'm so glad to see my colleague is actually following, paying so much attention about what I do. I travel to Shawinigan also every weekend, Mr. Speaker, and I would be glad to invite him at home as well because he seems to be very interested where I'm going.
So that's it. I mean, you know.
Minister of Finance going to be using.
It's just like, why? Like, they're so bent on using taxpayer dollars to go to the Bilderberg meeting. Really? You're worried about that kind of amount of waste?
Well, I think that it's more about just getting him to publicly admit that we're going to the Bilderberg.
Yes, exactly. Before the budget. So they can't budget it, but they're going to go to the Bilderberger. Carney sends his finance minister to secretive Bilderberg conference instead of tabling budget. That's from Dean Allison. What?
Isn't the Bilderberg a conspiracy, or is that?
That's what I'm saying. That's what's so great about this, right? Remember, it was all a big conspiracy, and it's one of those things. Oh, they weren't doing it. Oh, they are doing it, but it's good for the world. It's that whole meme, right? About
how things come to me.
Now it's good, right? It used to not happen at all, but now it's good. So I got some stuff highlighted here. This is just talking about the Bilderberg, but. Oh, so my highlighted thing didn't work. So this is really frustrating. So maybe it'll bring back my other highlights. Yeah. So that this app that we're using sucks. So all that work I went through, all that pre-show work has just gone out the toilet.
Huh. I think Twitter is not the best. There's a little highlight, or is that not yours?
That's not mine.
Oh.
No.
Well, Twitter's not good. It's too active.
Okay, I'll remember it here. Here's Jeremy McKenzie. They can't produce a budget because they haven't been told what the agenda is from Bilderberg yet. Seriously. That's a good point.
Old Jeremy.
Peak liberal arrogance has been restored. Well done, Carney. Mark Carney has attended Bilderberg meetings. He participated in the meetings in 2011, 2012, 2018, 2019, 2022 and 2024, and was a member of the Bilderberg Meetings Steering Committee from 2011 until mid-January 2025.
How come he's not gone?
Well, because he's sending his finance guy.
I think Carney and everyone is here right now in Alberta.
Because of the G7? Well, the Bilderberg was right before the G7.
When's the G7 start?
On the 15th.
Oh, so
Bilderberg must be right now.
Why would they start it on a Sunday?
I don't know, but...
So the Bilderberg must be this weekend and the G7's next week?
Bilderberg from June 12th to June 15th at the Grand Hotel in Stockholm, Sweden. And the G7 is the 15th to the 17th in Kananaskis. So they overlap. So they basically just fly from Bilderberg to the G7.
Yeah.
Right?
Interesting.
They just take their week off and they go to both conferences, right?
It's not a week off.
What do you mean?
I'm sure they're getting paid.
Oh, you know, yeah, that's true. So here, I'm going to read this because this is a pretty good, this is from Corrupt Saint. Dear Liberal government, you've truly outdone yourself, Mark Carney, whisking Finance Minister François-Philippe Champagne off to the clandestine Bilderberger meeting while Canada clamors for a federal budget. From coast to coast, we're wrestling with skyrocketing housing costs, healthcare systems stretched thinner than a dollar store tarp, and Chinese tariffs gutting our farmers. Yet you're hobnobbing with global elites in Madrid instead of tackling our $62.3 billion deficit disaster. We need a budget now, not some half-baked fall economic update that reeks of procrastination. The irony's richer than a Bay Street bonus. You sermonize about affordability, about a net zero nirvana, but can't spare a moment to fix Canada's crumbling foundations before jetting off for secret chats with NATO honchos and corporate overlords. Don Davies' NDP propping up this farce must be snickering as you prioritize international schmoozing over our porous borders and an EV mandate with zero infrastructure to support it. Get it together, Carney. Patch up Canada's gaping wounds before chasing Bilderberg's backroom clout, or we'll be left begging for solutions while you're clinking glasses in Europe's elite hideaways. I just thought that was a very well-written rant. Thank you, Corrupt Saint.
Not bad.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, this EV thing is back on the table. I mean, I don't know if you've heard about that, but they're still pushing this 2035 thing with EVs. I mean, there was a CEO of Ford came out against it, and I'm like thinking, man, what are they thinking? There's no infrastructure to support it. You guys are having brownouts in Alberta the last couple of years, and they want to just pump up the EVs. Like, you know why? I wonder, because they've got investments in China EVs, don't they? I mean, and they've got a bunch of subsidies in these EV companies in Canada.
Well, we have a huge, that'd be counterintuitive.
Isn't that kind of weird? Isn't that kind of corrupt if you put our money into these subsidies and then you force the regulations to change?
Well, I don't know. But I don't know that any of those subsidies worked out, did they?
Well, that's the thing. Maybe it's not too late to make them work.
And then there's 100% tariff on Chinese EVs, which would be counterintuitive to investing in Chinese.
With our pension fund. $600 million of our pension fund, I think, went to Chinese EVs, and then they tariff it. So is that a bit of a...
That's not good.
That's not good. Right?
That's bad business.
That seems bad. Like, it's not even, that's like anti-corruption. That's just fucking biting your own tail.
It's a real mess. You've got a real mess on you. You're in a real mess. I mean, so China could just tank our pension at any time just by shutting down that industry. You know,
not that they would shut down
your
pension, but it's a lot. That's a lot. It's $600 million. That's a lot of money.
How much of that is, how much is the pension fund? 600, right? So that's like 1%. No. I think the pension fund's like 500 billion, isn't it?
I'll check.
All right. I'm going to pull a clip up. See if you've seen this yet. Parents report that a male bus driver dressed as a female schoolgirl and called the route the Lolita line. What would you do, Graham, if your kid was on this route?
So you pulled up, you picked up the kids dressed like that?
Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
Why do you call your bus the Lolita Line? Why is it called the Lolita Line? Why is it called the Lolita Line?
You caught the
when people are mentally sick.
You caught the first bit, right? You seen her?
Yeah. Yeah. But that's the best question. Why do you call it the Lolita Line? Like, they must know what that means.
Yeah, it's retarded. I mean, it's the most stupid thing you could possibly do to knit is to do that and then name it after Epstein's fucking plane. What? Of course, it's the Mexicans that are pissed off about it.
Well, yeah, they won't put up with that shit. Wow. How much money do you think they put into that gender affirming policy stuff or the anti-gay propaganda stuff? How much money do you think that school board put into it?
What school board?
The school board that school bus is running for.
Oh,
that's Woodbridge. That's Woodbridge in Ontario.
So you're asking me, is this a real question?
It's a real question. Yes.
How much?
I saw the answer today, but I haven't.
Okay, give it to me again. Give me the question again.
Woodbridge.
Yeah. Yeah. The whole question.
Well, how much money have they put in of the taxpayers? Let's say your tax dollars from property taxes. What funds tax dollars funds the school programs? How many millions did they put into this? How much did they spend on this consulting for this type of DEI pride stuff?
Oh, out of their budget?
Yeah. No, I don't know. Just a total dollar value. I mean,
for Woodridge?
Yeah.
Not for just that, for the whole school, just for the school.
The school district, the Woodridge School District.
$150,000?
Okay, I'm trying to find it now.
You asked me a question you don't know the answer to?
Well, I told you I saw it today, but I'm trying to find it. Huh. I'm searching on X here to see if...
Hopefully it didn't get deleted.
It was from somebody that we're familiar with on X. I just don't know exactly what it is. I think it was 300 and something million. Yeah, that's what I would guess.
How much money is the school board getting?
Well, I know that's why I was blown away. That's why I should find it before. I mean, I want to find it before we move on.
All right. Well, I'm going to play a clip and you can keep looking for it. I'll buy you 2.5 minutes here.
Okay. Buy me a couple of minutes here. But is it going to be about that?
No, it's not really, but it's okay. So this is a BC doctor speaking out about what we were talking about earlier today about the BC healthcare system. So this is a Canadian emergency doctor sounds the alarm on our healthcare system and gets threatened with dismissal for going public. This is from Table Salt.
Our emergency system is failing. Frontline providers are not allowed to talk about it.
Emergency physician Caitlin Stockton is blowing the whistle, alleging the Fraser Health Authority threatened her job after she tried to warn patients the Eagle Ridge Hospital emergency room was at a breaking point.
The harassment and muzzling and silencing and bullying of frontline providers needs to stop.
On November 18th, 2024, doctors urgently asked Fraser Health for help, saying conditions in the ER were unsafe as doctors became overwhelmed. But their requests were allegedly denied.
We were doing everything we could to treat those patients. The people working on that day unquestionably went above and beyond. Some people did fall through the cracks, and it was horrible.
With the situation spiraling, doctors posted this sign calling the wait times unacceptable. Fraser Health later obtained CCTV footage of Stockton posting it and allegedly threatened to revoke her hospital privileges and file a complaint against her. Stockton says it's part of a pattern of silencing frontline medical workers.
This happens all the time. It happens to nurses, it happens to physicians, and this is why the public doesn't really have the full truth about what's happening in our publicly funded hospitals.
The lawsuit also claims the health authority has repeatedly ignored doctors' pleas for help. It says that after the deadly attack on the Lapu Lapu Festival in Vancouver, doctors at Royal Columbian Hospital asked Fraser Health to initiate a Code Orange, a medical protocol that allows hospitals to respond to mass casualty events. But it claims that request was also denied. Stockton says she fears patients are being failed by an overburdened system where medical professionals are punished for speaking out.
It feels like one of those dreams where you're screaming for help, but no sound is coming out. And it just drains the life out of you after a while.
She says the conditions she witnessed on November 18th are playing out in emergency rooms across Canada.
Knowing that you're not providing standard of care to somebody who really needs it is a horrible feeling. It's not the way I was trained. It doesn't feel right. It's not what patients deserve.
The suit also alleges Fraser Health has failed to deal with a string of violent incidents at the hospital. As recently as January, staff at Eagle Ridge were attacked by a patient wielding a machete. CBC News has obtained a letter signed by 50 emergency physicians across BC supporting Stockton's claims. She says as she goes public, she hopes more doctors and patients will step forward demanding change.
Yeah, it's crazy. I had that one too.
Haha, beat you, bitch.
Yeah, it's just disgusting. This what's going on. It's good that it's all coming to light though. I mean, I think it's going to happen. It's going to take a few.
Well, that was a CBC clip too, so.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to take a few brave doctors to come forward. And yeah.
The problem is, how are you fixing it at this point without just making all the doctors Indians?
Yeah.
Or something, you know, probably just Indians because no one else wants to come here and be a doctor. Anyone else that's like leaving their country to be a doctor is going to go to the States where they can make money.
Yeah, you've seen those memes, right, about how many people are actually leaving Canada as well. It's like a transfer happened. There's a big transfer happening, really.
Did you find it?
No, I can't find it, dude. I cannot find it. So I've searched through Grok. I've searched on the internet. I just can't.
Did you go in and search in the individual profile?
What do you mean?
Do you know whose profile it was on X?
Well, no, I can't remember. It could have been like somebody that recently... I saw today, like Kirk Lubomov or somebody like that.
But you already looked, so there's no point in me looking.
Yeah, I don't think there's any point in you looking.
All right.
I think I'm just going to have to give up on it and because I'm going to start going crazy. Yeah, and yeah. I even Grok couldn't find it.
Well, here is our, Modest Recusal is actually a play on two different clips that I have. This is the modest part. So this is from CTV News. If people haven't heard, no jail time for BC man with, quote, relatively modest child porn collection, judge rules. So.
Tumblr.
Yeah. Oh. Tumblr. A BC man convicted on child pornography charges can serve his sentence in the community. This sounds safe. With the kids. Why not just get him working with the kids? In part because of the relatively modest size of his collection. So it seems like it's not a hardcoreness. It's a size thing, right? It's how much pornography he possessed. A judge has ruled. Mark Keenan pleaded guilty to possessing and distributing. And child pornography in Kelowna Provincial Court and was handed a conditional sentence of 2 years less a day. The 54-year-old will be under house arrest for the first 18 months of his sentence, then bound by a 6 p.m. curfew for the remainder. The court heard RCMP search Keenan's home in 2018 after receiving concerning information about his activity on the social media website Tumblr. And found 6 child pornography images on his electronic devices depicting boys between the ages of 9 and 16. So it's just 6 images, Graham. This is no big deal, right?
Just modest.
In his May 2nd sentencing decision, which was recently posted online, Judge Andrew Tam noted the size of Keenan's collection sets this case apart from others cited in court, some of which involve hundreds or even thousands of images and videos being seized from other sex offenders. Although there is no strict mathematical relationship between the size of the collection and the length, or indeed type of sentence, the size of a collection has often been held to an aggravating factor, Tam wrote. So that means you could just, like, if you just rape someone quick, then you should be okay, right?
No, that doesn't have anything to do with the same. That's not what they're saying at all.
Just a little rape?
No, that's not. It's not the equivalent. It's a false equivalency.
Is it?
Well, technically it is, yeah. I mean, you can't. What?
What if you just grab a titty? Walk by, grab a titty.
That's a better equivalency, probably.
It stands to reason, then, that the modest collection, while not a mitigating factor, could nevertheless distinguish it from other cases. None of the images depicted penetrative sexual activity, the court heard, though one showed a grown man and a child victim in their hands, with their hands on each other's genitals. The most damning evidence from police statement, despite pleading guilty to the charges, Keenan maintained that he is not sexually attracted to children and had only stumbled upon the child pornography in 2017 while searching for other images such as sunsets and beaches, according to the decision. That's a hell of a fucking swoop. Keenan was appalled by what he found and decided to start a Tumblr blog to lure out pedophiles so he could report them to the site's moderators in a kind of undercover sting.
Oh my God.
The judge was not convinced. Tam noted that Keenan remained in possession of the images a year after finding them and had been carrying on conversations with other Tumblr users, which he expressed interest in sexual activities with children. They are unnecessarily graphic and go well beyond what one may expect in order to identify who may be a pedophile on the website, Tam found. His participation in these conversations seems to genuinely earnest for it to be a ruse. The judge ultimately ruled on a balance of probabilities that Keenan's collection and his online conversations were for his own sexual gratification. And he still just said, still just let him go. The most damning evidence will come from Mr. Keenan's own mouth, Tam added. Upon his arrest, he gave a voluntary statement to police. When confronted with the Tumblr messages and asked if he were aroused by them, he replied, "I mean, in a way, it's hard not to be."
What?
The judge considered Keenan's plea, his lack of prior criminal record and support of letters from the community, as mitigating factors while determining that a conditional sentence was appropriate. Keenan will be on probation for a year after his sentence is over and must submit a DNA sample to law enforcement. This dude's going to rape a kid, I bet. I mean, this is usually the way it goes, isn't it? It's usually am I allowed to say that? I mean,
you think they'd be setting an example, you know?
This is terrible.
Right?
This is fucking not good. It's okay to have a little porn, not a lot, and to entice minors online.
It's hard to believe that they're not making an example of this and saying, like, this is not, you know, right.
All right.
And did you see the judge, the Supreme Court judge in Canada or whatever they call them, what's the highest level judge or whatever, talking about Trump, like literally getting political and saying Trump's an authoritarian or whatever?
I didn't see that.
This is what's happening in our court system. Like, it's just so crazy.
It's fucked up. It is not good because this sort of stuff tends to escalate, especially if the punishments are not severe, you know?
That's what I mean. Like, this is why we're in the mess we're in.
The same sort of thing with drugs.
Yeah. Well, crime around drugs, like, and just being able to use outside, like using outside, for example.
My Elon net is sketching up and down. Let's hope it holds out. Okay, I'll do them back to back so that we can get this, get them both out of the way. Public safety minister, our buddy Abagabadiba, or whatever his name was, he was the gun guy, right? Public safety minister recuses himself from files on two terrorist groups. I'll play the clip in a minute, but I thought I had this highlighted. So how'd you fix your highlight? Just highlight something.
Yeah, sometimes that works.
What if I refresh it?
Oh, that won't work. That'll erase it probably.
Now the ad is there again too. So this is, what's his name again? Gary Anandasangari. The cabinet minister leading Prime Minister Mark Carney's border security push. Border security. The dude's doing border security. Said Tuesday is recusing himself from files related to a Sri Lankan terrorist group and its Canadian front organization. In a statement sent to Global News on Tuesday, the public safety minister, Gary Anandasangari, said he had stepped back from any matter related to the Liberation Tigers of Tamil Elam or the World Tamil Movement. The minister did not explain why he had done so, except to state that it was out of an abundance of caution. He released the statement after Global News asked for a copy of conflict of interest documents he had prepared. By contrast, his office issued a statement last Thursday saying he had asked public safety officials to implement a screen on any national security issues relating to the Tamil community. Anandasangari and his family are members of the Tamil community, it said, and he had asked public safety officials to implement a screen to ensure that there is no perception of any conflict. Global News asked the minister's office Tuesday why he had recused himself from files on the two terror groups and why he changed the description of the topics deemed off limits, but he has not responded. Both groups he cited in his recusal statements have their origins in the conflicts in Sri Lanka, where Anandasangari was born before coming to Canada and ruling you. In 1983 and becoming an activist, realtor, lawyer, and MP. The Liberation Tigers of Tamil Elam, or LTTE, fought a 25-year civil war against the Sri Lankan government forces in an attempt to carve a separate state out of the tiny island nation off India's southern tip. In 2006, Canada placed LTTE on its list of terrorist entities, citing its terror attacks against civilian centers and political assassinations, such as the 1991 killing of former Indian Prime Minister Rajiv Gandhi. You know, when you're going to piss off the Indians this much, it's probably not a great idea to let so many of them into the country. Just saying.
What do you mean? Who's pissing off the Indians?
Well, this group that is now we're allowing into our government killed the Indian Prime Minister in 1991. And they were pissed off about Jagmeet too, right? Because and all this Khalistani shit.
I know, yeah. Who knows what's going to happen between all these factions, right? and how does this not all get cleared up before he gets to be an MP? Like,
so how about this? The world...
I think if I became an MP, like, I would be in trouble for my past addictions or something like that, right? I mean, that I used to party a lot. I mean, that would probably be a big deal. I'd have to tell them, like, hey, I used to...
I don't think you'd have to. No, that's nothing compared to, I used to be in a terrorist organization.
That's what I'm saying. Like, but I mean,
the World Tamil Movement, or WTM, was added to the list in 2008. The RCMP raided its offices in Toronto and Montreal, and the government seized its assets on the grounds it was a fundraising arm of the LTTE. The Minister of Public Safety is responsible for the government's official list of terrorist groups. So this is concerning.
Look what's come off the list. Miraculously, we've got a few off the list. I mean, what if you looked right now at the list and it was gone?
Last year, then, when Dominic LeBlanc was minister, he recommended the LTTE and World Tamil Movement remain listed.
Oh, okay.
According to Public Safety Canada, while there have been no known LTTE attacks in recent years, remnants of the group have continued to operate in Sri Lanka and India's Tamil Nadu. In addition, LTTE has an international fundraising and procurement network that continues to exist. While I appreciate the minister being aware that some people may question his loyalties, it is not enough to recuse himself from such a key item in this portfolio. The PM needs to reassign this minister and bring in somebody completely free of appearance of conflicts. For any minister that has changed portfolio, here we go. The Prime Minister has handed Anandasangari the task of bringing in legislation to toughen Canada's borders. So I think I can probably leave it at that. Government forces routed the LTE in 2009 and killed its leader. After the war ended, Anandasangari helped hundreds of Sri Lankan migrants who had paid human smugglers to ferry them to Canada's west coast on board the ships MV Ocean Lady and MV Sunsea. He and his wife have also been critical of Canada's national security agencies, particularly when it comes to their handling of issues related to Tamil refugees. So this is
great. You don't say.
Now we're going to start funneling some new goons. Right?
Wow. Oh, yeah. That's unbelievable. That's a good one.
It's pretty wild. I still got another... I only got one left, but it is also a banger.
Okay, go for it. Oh, I'll do it if you want. This is a banger too. I think this is old, but it's worth redoing. This is Shane Wensley says, as someone who's built a business and dealt with all levels of government, I can tell you Canada's public service is broken. Here's what's wrong and how we can fix it. So this is a video of this lady who was investigating the contracts for professional services. Darren, you remember that?
Yes.
Given the investigations you've done so far on McKinsey and GC strategies, do you have a sense at this point of how widespread these issues are in the public service?
Well, I can only speak to those two elements. And in both cases, the vendors represented a really small percentage of what was spent on professional services contracts by the federal government. But in the McKinsey work, we had looked at 10 Crown corporations and 10 departments. In this audit, there's 31 federal organizations, including one Crown and departments. And we found issues in almost every contract that we looked at, which tells me that there's no reason to believe it's limited to these two. And it's time for the public service to go back to the basics in understanding procurement rules and why they should be followed.
That's pretty crazy, eh?
That's pretty wild.
To just understand basic procurement rules and can't, like, that's how far we've come. I mean, we used to do government contracts in the 90s and the early aughts, right? For the helicopter maintenance and stuff, right? And it was hard to get government contracts. You had to go through a bunch of hoops. I mean, you're sure you'd become kind of favorable because you had capabilities and all that, but you had to go through a whole bunch of hoops to get government contracts. It's kind of hard to believe it's gone that sour since then. But anyways, I wasn't quite finished with that.
Oh,
but
I can stop.
No. I had stopped to share by mistake when I tried to shut off the video, but I guess that, let me finish this guy's post on this. So Canada's public service is broken, political interference, bloated man. Like, cause I'm going to try and keep this in mind for like how long it's been, 20 years since I worked with government contracts, 20 years or more, 20 to 30. Bloated management, entrenched union culture have eroded an institution once trusted to serve Canadians. It's time we face this reality head on. It's unelected political staffers and some elected officials driving public policy behind closed doors. Many have little real world experience, yet they shape decisions impacting every Canadian. I mean, this is what we talk about, right? This is the competency crisis right here, right? The managerial class running the show. Public sector unions protect job security regardless of performance. That's what I hate about the unions. Seniority trumps merit. That's what I've always been pissed off about, making it almost impossible to discipline or remove underperforming employees. This fosters mediocrity, not excellence. That's the main thing. Look no further than the Phoenix pay system disaster. Launched in 2016, it caused pay issues for 80% of federal workers, with costs ballooning past $3.5 billion. This is a system of deeper dysfunction. And here's how we fix it. Restore accountability to elected officials. Good luck. Reform union contracts to reward performance. Good luck. That'll never happen. Streamline management. Good luck. Hire and promote based on merit. Yeah, maybe. Our public service must serve Canadians, not insiders. So there's a bunch of people obviously agreeing and about how inefficient they are and how clueless they are. And so, anyways, that's there's a nice Alberta picture for you, buddy. Land of the free.
AI Alberta.
As a builder, you should know homes with rotten foundations plagued with endless issues are not a good candidate for renovation. They need to be abandoned so a new home can be built from scratch. Independent Alberta is the only way forward. Yeah, I like it. All right, so there. Sorry, I just wanted to finish up that.
No problem. This is my last piece of the day. This comes from an article that was posted in The Economist and then deleted a couple hours later.
No way.
But I was able to find it in the Wayback Machine at archive.org. So I got the link.
Do we know why it was deleted?
I don't know. Let's read it and find out. So Carney's Colossal Canada-U.S. Pact, it would give America a first right of refusal on Canadian minerals. Canada's been the crucible for Donald Trump's rambunctious trade and foreign policy. America's president had his northern neighbor in his sights before he was even inaugurated. As world leaders flocked to Alberta on June 15th for the G7 summit, Canada's on the verge of cementing its place in the vanguard of Trumpian geopolitics. It may soon become the first country to emerge from a bewildering thicket of tariffs and threats with a sweeping new pact on security and trade. Caprice has been Mr. Trump's calling card, so no one is declaring a done deal, but its outlines have already been negotiated. Mr. Trump will lift the tariffs on Canada's exports in exchange for guaranteed access to the country's critical minerals. During his election campaign, Mark Carney, Canada's prime minister, told Canadians that Mr. Trump wanted to break us so that America can own us. If the deal goes through, he may find it hard to explain why he has made such a monumental deal with the breaker in chief. The deal has been in the offing since Mr. Carney visited the White House on May 6th, the week after his Liberal Party won a historic fourth term. At Mr. Trump's Oval Office press conference, Mr. Carney declared that, having met with the owners of Canada during the course of the campaign, it's not for sale. But in private discussions across the hall in the Roosevelt Room, the contours of Fortress Can-Am were already being hammered out. Before going to Washington, Mr. Carney asked officials to list the Canadian products that Mr. Trump needs the most. Rare earth elements and critical minerals topped the bill. A continental agreement would free the United States from its reliance on China for the extraction and refining of these resources. They are vital to the production of magnets that go into engines, resonators, and navigation systems for everything from missiles to fighter jets. The F-35 Lightning II alone, the multi-role fighter most NATO countries have ordered, requires over 400 kilograms of rare earth elements. High-tech equipment of all kinds, from batteries to semiconductors, require rare earths and critical minerals whose supply is often dominated by countries that Mr. Trump dislikes trading with. Tariffs were meant to force manufacturers to set up shop in the United States, but they are also stunting investment in the mining of these critical elements in Canada. So Canadian negotiators are using the national security imperative to get them lifted. Felivio Volpe, head of Canada's Association of Auto Parts Manufacturers, noticed that the White House wants to repatriate manufacturing, but they don't get to repatriate resources. People briefed on the negotiations say the United States would be guaranteed first right of refusal on Canadian resources. That is quite a prize at a time when countries around the world are scrambling to line up their supplies. That may explain why Mr. Trump wants a deal with Canada, but why would Mr. Carney work with the man who has repeatedly said he wants to swallow his country? Probably because Mr. Trump's tariffs are not just stifling investment, but beginning to hurt Canadian workers. Unemployment hit 7% in May. Pandemic aside, it's the highest rate since 2016. Mr. Carney has vowed to diversify Canada's trading options so that it is never again so dependent on a single trading partner. But it will be years before Canada can escape the gravity of the world's largest consumer market that is so easily accessible by rail or lorry, if it ever can. The deteriorating Canadian economy compels Mr. Carney to act now to maintain access to the market that has been responsible for Canada's prosperity for close to a century. Access to minerals is not the only thing Mr. Carney is offering. On the campaign trail, he said he would spend the equivalent of 2% of GDP on defense by 2030. On June 9th, he announced a dramatic acceleration, saying Canada would in fact hit 2% by March 2026 by spending an extra $9.3 billion, most of which will go on recruitment and increasing soldiers' pay. Critical mineral exploitation is expensive. Canada's reserves of uranium, tungsten, vanadium, and graphite are in isolated areas. Roads will need to be carved out of the wilderness. Processing plants will have to be built where there is little existing infrastructure. A pact that guarantees decades of American business would probably push firms currently sitting on the sidelines with stacks of cash to invest in one of this century's mining booms. Canada has a constitutional duty to consult its First Nations before proceeding in resource development, and many Indigenous leaders remain wary. These kinds of projects can take decades to go from planning to full production. Any deal would almost certainly only bear fruit beyond the political lifespans of both Mr. Carney and a president who favors leverage over the letter of agreements he has championed. The peril to the national security of the United States might tame that Trumpian tendency in this instance.
So nothing about the business dealings of Carney and Trump directly, I guess, in The Economist there, right?
No, just that we gave him first. I think the reason they pulled it is because of the first right of refusal there. I mean, there it is right there.
Jackie Tarr, co-owner of Canada. We should change our bios to say that. We are co-owners of Canada. Remember when Carney said he checked with the owners of the country?
I'm not changing.
Economist America's editor Hal Hodgson emailed, "We withdrew the story on Canadian Trade Talk shortly after publication because we were not satisfied with the sourcing." Translation, "We published a bullshit piece and got called out for it, so we're going to pretend it never happened." Right?
I guess we'll find out if the U.S. starts taking all our minerals.
First right of refusal. I mean, they should have the first right of refusal. I mean, this should be like, we should be open up for business. We should be open for business.
Shouldn't we get the first right of refusal?
Well, of course that wouldn't. That's beyond. It's even beyond that, right? This is ridiculous. It's whatever we don't need. Once it is used up in Canada and whatever else we have, we should sell it to the States. I mean,
exactly, and we should accelerate a bunch of industries at the same time.
Yeah, but it's not. I don't think it's gonna happen. I mean, what's your initial thought after a month or two of this? You know, we're going to be the greatest country in the G7 and all this, and then...
Too soon to tell. I will say that my last bill was 40% less without the carbon taxes and stuff.
Wow. Really?
Your last hydro bill?
Yeah, be careful with those. The way they don't make it easy to read. They do some weird averaging out or some weird stuff.
Well, I don't have the averaging. I just have to compare like the gigajoule, how much energy I actually used, and see what it comes down to.
I had this segment from last week that I saved or from a couple days ago. I can do it now if you want. It's the GDP per province. I mean, I was going to do that or the $30 million ferries. Apparently, we're buying ferries from a Chinese company. I mean, we can't even build our own ferries. Like, it's... Dude, what's going on? So what do you want to hear?
I want to hear the ferries.
Okay. This is a weird one. Hope it comes off okay here. Jeff Kibble just confronted Chrystia Freeland with a straightforward question. This is from Harman Bangu. Who is he? He's the MLA for Langley Abbotsford, Conservative Caucus, BC.
Langley?
Will the Liberals attach a common sense condition to BC Ferries' $30 million subsidy that they buy Canadian-built ships? Why are we handing billions of dollars to China to build ferries that could be built right here at home? Freeland's response? Shocking. So there's a $30 million subsidy. Common sense condition to BC Ferries is $30 million subsidy that they buy Canadian-built ships. So I guess we're giving a subsidy to BC Ferries because they're so inefficient. I mean, I should be careful, but... And then they're going to be spending billions with this Chinese company to build them.
Member for Cowichan, Malahat, Langford.
Mr. Speaker, BC Ferries just announced that they will purchase 4 new full-sized ferries from a Chinese state-owned company rather than from a proven Canadian shipbuilder such as Seaspan in North Vancouver. Yet the Liberals are set to hand over $30 million to BC Ferries, while BC Ferries hands over critical jobs, investment in industry to China. Will the Liberals attach a common sense condition of buying Canadian-built ships here. To BC Ferries in order to receive their $30 million subsidy?
Great question.
What a concept, eh? Canadian-built ships?
Because they must build all sorts of ships on the East Coast, right?
That C-SPAN's in Vancouver, I think. So there's some shipbuilding in Vancouver, too. But yeah.
Building yards out there?
Yeah, but the East Coast probably more so, like you said, yeah. I mean, wouldn't that be, maybe that would affect the GDP of the East. Wait till you see that map. So it'll help me show you, when I show you that map after, it'll put some context to that. So here's a response.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the member opposite for that important question.
Oh, the performative, eh? The performative is just like, it makes me throw up in my mouth. I want to thank the...
Absolutely share his concern the word. When it comes to government procurement at all levels. Now is a time when we need to support Canadian workers and Canadian industries, and we need to work closely with our allies and trade partners. That project, Mr. Speaker, was not a federal government project.
So that's it. Just wasn't federal, so...
God, I fucking hate her.
It's so infuriating. They must be trained how to just repeat all the bullshit that was in the question and just repeat all the fluff talk and then just not answer in the end. It's just infuriating. So here's our GDP per province. Now I double checked all this. I'm gonna go over the numbers with you because this doesn't seem to make sense, but I think the trend is correct. So look at how it goes from dark red. So this is debt to GDP ratio. So Newfoundland, Labrador, 40. I'm going to round up all the numbers. Like basically the whole East is 40%. New Brunswick, it comes down a little bit. Manitoba, 34. Nova Scotia, 32. Prince Edward Island, 29. Saskatchewan, 14. We're closer to 15, BC 15, Alberta 12. See the color-coded thing there, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, I asked your assistant what they thought of this. Let me just try and find that tab here.
Do you want to give you a couple states? Wyoming is the best state at 4.9%, North Carolina 7.1%, Georgia 10.7%. Florida 11.1, Texas 13, Massachusetts 17, Illinois 17.
So that sounds like it's net probably. So why isn't it sharing the other one?
That's gross.
That's gross.
Okay. Yeah. Is that other one net?
Well, that's the problem is, that's what I was going over in here. So this was the 2021, because that's going back to 2021, right? That one is the 2020-2021. So then when I asked it to look, it looked, and it's quite different here. It's got BC and Alberta 39, 35, sorry, other way around, 35, 39 for Alberta, Saskatchewan 55, Manitoba 88. So I thought, well, that's got to be different, a different measurement, right? And then Newfoundland, Labrador is way up at 112. So that's way off. So then I said, well, it's supposed to be for 2020 and 2021. And then it changed a little bit here, 41. And so that looks more like it. It's still not quite the same. Alberta is still at 9%, lowest among the provinces. Cause then I asked it to do net GDP, net debt to GDP. and then, but it's still off a bit, right? So then I thought, well, why is it doing that? The first answer doesn't seem to match what I saw. Maybe said the 20. So then I get it to do 2020 and 2021. And it still comes out. Oh, there's the gross again. And here's the net. So Newfoundland and Labrador at 60, Quebec and Ontario 43. So this is even worse. So I couldn't, you know, I couldn't duplicate what was on that map, but it was the same trend. You know, obviously, we all know that Saskatchewan, BC, and Alberta are the lowest. And the East is the highest, but I mean, that would be nice to get some shipbuilding from the East, right? I mean, maybe they don't have a way to get the ships. What would they have to do?
Well, go to the Panama Canal. China. I can't take any much longer to go down through the Panama Canal than it does to come from fucking China.
I mean, even still, you'd think it'd be worth it, you know?
Yes, of course it'd be worth it.
Even if it costs us more money, it would be worth it. That's why I don't understand, especially when it comes to public works, public projects. Man, why not use our own stuff?
It was just the trash that was made in Taiwan. That was before Taiwan. Is Taiwan's just China now?
What?
Is there still a Taiwan?
Yeah.
You sure? How come none of the stuff is made in Taiwan anymore?
I don't know, but just check to see what your assistant says about that.
Is there... I'll put what happened to Taiwan. Let's see. Is currently navigating a complex landscape marked by heightened security concerns. Huh. Seems like it's still a country.
Yeah, it should be. But I mean, China's overtaken the manufacturing, obviously.
China took it over, but they used to just make crap. They shouldn't be making ferries. It's just going to be a ferry where the doors break off and just bad things fucking happen. Not good.
It's just those are the types of things you think we would really just make ourselves, you know, be proud of making our own ferries exactly how we need them, how we want them. Like, why can't we just do that?
Yeah, I agree. So are we out of here?
I think we're out of here, yeah.
All right, guys. Well, if you like it, like, subscribe, share, comment on YouTube, all that sort of stuff. You can check out a-list.ca if you want to listen to the podcast form of this or support us or all that kind of fun stuff. Check out grimerica.ca for other podcasts, grimericaoutlaw.ca, contact@thecabin.com for trips and events, adultbrain.ca for all sorts of audiobooks and ebooks and print books and publishing books and all that kind of fun stuff. Other than that, we love you guys. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.
Who's gonna kill this sacred cow? You were never political anyhow. Since when did you start trusting in the government? Since when was it okay to ridicule and shame your neighbor? Your opinions have become as fickle as artificial flavors. What matters most to you? What the TV host told you to do? Or a moral compass that points true north, oh true? Who's gonna kill this sacred cow? You were never religious anyhow. Since when did you kiss the ring on the hand of the Pope? Since when do we need pharmaceuticals to cope? Your soul has become, ever-loving soul has become, as brittle as communion wafers. What matters most to you? What the Holy Ghost told you to do, or a moral compass that points true north, oh true. I'm gonna kill this sacred cow. Bureaucrats think I'm non-essential anyhow. Since when has our culture become so lowbrow? It's all touchscreens, and nobody has any know-how. Your idea of fun is taking 1,001 photos of your duck face. Matters most to you what the celebrity's post told you was cool, or a moral compass that points true north, oh true. I'm gonna kill this sacred cow. I'm gonna kill your 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 sacred cow. I'm gonna kill I'm gonna kill your sacred cow. I'm gonna kill your sacred cow. I'm gonna kill your sacred cow.